fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Take a stick of bamboo, you take a stick of bamboo, you take a stick of bamboo, you throw it in the water. Oh, 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 Hanna.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Route 51, the highway, snakes along the valley formed by the Wisconsin River, from Lac de Flambeau south through the communities of Minocqua, Rhinelander, Tomahawk, Merrill, Wausau, and Mosinee, past the Big Old Plain Reservoir, and on to Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, to the great Lake Peetenwell and Castle Rock flowages, and on to the Mississippi River. The Wisconsin River is many things to many people, a source of recreation, boating, fishing, and swimming. A source of hydroelectric power for its paper mills, traditionally a source of commerce for the logging industry and riverside businesses, and also a beautiful rolling backdrop for riverfront homeowners from cabins to million-dollar mansions. The Wisconsin River was once described as a polluted open sewer. The Clean Water Act and the environmental revolution of the 60s and 70s changed that, but increasingly the river and its impoundments are the source of trouble. From massive fish kills on the Big Old Plain Reservoir to toxic algae blooms on Lake Peetenwell caused by too much phosphorus and, in an era of climate change, too little rain in the summer. Today on Route 51, we examine the water quality problems of the Wisconsin River Basin with our guests here in our studio, Matt Krueger, the River Restoration Program Manager of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. Also, John Kennedy, the Vice President of the Big Old Plain Citizens Organization, and joining us by telephone, County Conservationist for Adams County, Chris Murphy, who is working to develop innovative solutions for the algae blooms on Lake Peetenwell and the Castle Rock flowage. Now, as always, we want to hear from you. Is clean water in the Wisconsin River and its flowages and reservoirs important to you? And at what economic cost? Do you have a favorite place in the Wisconsin River Basin that you would like to share with us, a place you cherish? And do you remember the bad old days when the river was a polluted eyesore? Give us a phone call if you'd like to join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742. That number again is 1-800-780-9742. Matt Krueger, you were just at an event that was held today at UW Stevens Point, the Wisconsin River Water Quality Symposium. Tell us what that was all about, who was there, and what all of you were trying to accomplish.
Well, I'll start with your last question first. The goal overall was to determine solutions how we're going to clean up the Wisconsin River. It was a great gathering of folks from many different walks of life, citizens representing different conservation organizations, nonprofits, agencies, university folks, municipalities, wastewater treatment operators, and the crux of what we talked about. Well, we talked about a lot, but there was the sharing of information from a large-scale water quality study that the DNR is currently undertaking on the entire Wisconsin River watershed, referred to as a TMDL, and the most recent data from the last year's monitoring from the TMDL was shared.
And that stands for?
It stands for total maximum daily load.
Okay.
And it's basically a water quality study that incorporates a whole bunch of monitoring and determining what the current baseline conditions are of different water bodies in the watershed. Once the monitoring data is taken, it's modeled and a bunch of different scenarios are run. And at the end of this, there's allocations for basically how much of each type of pollutant the river can take before it does not meet water quality standards.
And before it gets to the point where people no longer want to fish in it,
exactly.
Swim in it, and so on.
Exactly.
And they were also, I'm sure, examining the phosphorus levels and some of the pollutant levels and some of the flowages that we talked about that are such a problem right now.
That's right. They've got great data on I believe it's 17 or 19 of the tributaries to the Wisconsin River. All of the main stem of the river is monitored. There's numerous monitoring sites throughout the impoundments. Pete and Well, Lake Wisconsin, Lake DuBay, Wausau, all those. There's a lot of data that's being collected that will basically allow us to, over the course of the coming years, chart a way forward on how we can reduce water pollution to the Wisconsin River and clean it up.
Well, we're going to get into that study in more detail a little bit later in the program. I did talk to Ed Culhane, who's a communications specialist with the Wisconsin DNR, and he'll be talking about that study a little more in depth. But Matt, for people who don't know who you are, tell us about the River Alliance of Wisconsin. And as you corrected me earlier, it's not the Wisconsin River Alliance. You're concerned about more than just one river in this state.
That's right. It's the River Alliance of Wisconsin because we deal with all the rivers in the state. We're a statewide river conservation group, a nonprofit group, working to protect, restore, and enhance flowing waters all over the state. We have a number of different program areas, from policy work at the Capitol to urban river restoration to invasive species work. The thread that runs through most of our work is helping to support local citizen watershed groups, lake and river groups, and helping them be more effective at being advocates for the water body that they've organized around. That's kind of the thread that unites the work that we do.
And you're the River Restoration Program Manager for that organization.
That's right.
What does that mean?
That means that my emphasis within the River Restoration Program is on the Wisconsin River. I spend a fair amount of time in the lower Wisconsin River talking and working with education outreach around aquatic invasive species, but what had me at the Wisconsin River Symposium today was the other hat I wear, which is heading up our Wisconsin River Initiative. And basically, that is it's a focused effort that the River Alliance has taken to look at the Wisconsin River, because it's basically all of the water quality challenges you see across the state of Wisconsin manifest themselves within the Wisconsin River, as you pointed out in your introduction very aptly. We have polluted runoff and nutrient issues and algae blooms. We have shoreline development, hydropower generation, invasive species, recreation, tourism, all of these things. And so it's a perfect laboratory for determining how you can address these issues that are challenging the Wisconsin River. And we generally work to reduce pollution in the Wisconsin River through our Wisconsin River Initiative, but more specifically, our work is working with a number of the different citizen groups that have organized on the flowages and impoundments and the main stem of the river in some cases to be more effective advocates. Groups like John's, full disclosure, we work with John's Big O Plain group. We work with the Pete and Well Castle Rock flowages and other groups. I'm not going to name them all, but help them be more effective at what they do.
Now, one of the things the River Alliance has been noted for is working to get dams removed on some of the rivers in Wisconsin. That's really not a possibility or even desirable on most of the Wisconsin River. Is that correct?
I would say that is correct. We have gone away from having that as a central focus of our organization. When we were founded 20 years ago, that was basically all we did. In fact, ironically, the last dam removal effort I think we were part of was with one of your other guests, Mr. Murphy, in Adams County. But we made a decision as an organization to shift from dam removal, which benefits has ecological benefits, but in terms of people that are impacted by it, it's largely paddlers and fishermen. We basically said, well, how can we affect more people in the state? And we shifted from dam removal to looking at urban rivers, because as we well know, almost every single municipality and important city in this state has a river that runs through it. And that river at one point was the reason that the municipality was located there. So that's often places you go down to downtown areas along the riverfront, and at some point they're pretty nasty places where things were dumped in toxic waste sites and that sort of thing. And now communities are realizing, much like Wausau has, that a cleaned up riverfront can be an amenity, and it can be a job builder and build a tax base, and people come to it. The phrase that people say that you hear is, rather than turning their back to the river, we're turning back to the river.
That's a big difference. You see these businesses now, instead of focusing away from the river, having their main entrances and their main focal point on the other side of that river, now increasingly they're looking toward the river, and they've got entrances on the river, particularly restaurants, particularly you know, places where recreation is important, bike trails, all of those things were just unthinkable on the Wisconsin River 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, especially in Wausau. look at the kayak course that draws people from all around the world with the kayaking championships. And you see it across the country. You go to some of these, there's national organizations that deal with rivers, and there are statistics about the amount of private investment that public investments on riverfronts can leverage. The numbers, they vary, but I've heard anywhere from 13 to 1 to 8 to 1. One public dollar will leverage $8 to $13 of private investment. So we've been working in Racine with some, mm-hmm. with the citizen group and with the city down there since 2007, helping them organize and bring to life, plan and bring the plan to life, a restoration plan for the Root River.
Well, let's move to Chris Murphy, because Chris, as a county conservationist for Adams County, you've been dealing with an area that's really important for not only tourism, but you've got a lot of homeowners around Lake Peatonwell and the Castle Rock flowage. Peatonwell is 23,000 acres, and boy, that's a troubled waterway.
Yes, we've been working with particularly the River Alliance, and they've been a wonderful partner with us in this adventure. There is a citizens group that has been extremely instrumental in working towards improving the water quality on Peatonwell and Castle Rock, and that's the Peatonwell and Castle Rock stewards, or as we fondly call them, the Packers. And we've invested quite a few years in this, so we've really been successful, and a lot of that success has been due to the partnerships that we've been able to establish with organizations like the River Alliance of Wisconsin, the Department of Natural Resources, our legislators, most notably Scott Krug and Julie Lassa. Marlon Schneider, when he was in office, was very instrumental.
That's a bipartisan group. Scott is Republican. Julie is a Democrat. So this is something that cuts across political boundaries.
Yes, it really does. And in most recent times, Senator Luther Olson's office has shown some interest in helping us out as well. So just very, very exciting times for us here down here in Peatonwell and Castle Rock.
Well, how bad is it during the summer months when you've got those algae blooms happening? What does, for those who have never been down there in the middle of the summer, what happens to these large bodies of water? What do they look like?
At the worst case scenario, think of green paint, like a latex paint, that forms basically a film across the water. And in some cases, you can reach down into that water and literally pick it up as if you were putting your hands into a bucket of latex paint and bringing it out. That is the most common, you know, the green algae blooms that we'll experience.
What does it smell like?
Oh, it's awful. Terrible smelling. I can't even characterize it. It's that bad. We also will experience the blue-green algaes, which it provides a terrible, harmful health
It causes health problems, the blue-green algae, Matt?
Yeah, that's accurate. I think there's neurotoxins in it. I mean, I'm certain, not my area of expertise, but I know that dogs have gotten sick and died. People get sick from swimming in it. Yeah, it's nasty stuff.
Well, Chris, this must be terrible on tourists who want to take their vacations on this huge body of water, 23,000 acres. And then what about all those expensive homes on the shoreline of the flowages? How do people sell their homes?
It's difficult. At the very least, you know, we've had phone calls come into our office where folks have talked about hearing stories of these algae blooms and wanting to know if it's possible to get rid of them. And, you know, we just, all we can do is we're saying we're doing our best. We've got testimonials from local businesses that can tell you about families all excited coming, pulling into their businesses, ready to recreate on Peatonwell and Castle Rock Lake, only to find out that the blooms are out there and just, makes it a miserable time for them, only for them to turn around and leave.
Wow. Now, as I understand it, and we've talked about this before, you're working with an Australian green energy company on an innovative solution for those algae blooms. I don't want to get into too much detail here because we'll talk about that later in the program, but give us an idea of who these people are and why they're interested in peat and oil.
Sure. They're called Global Environmental Infrastructure Technology Solutions, or commonly known as GITES. And they design, build, and manufacture and operate infrastructure plants as a joint venture company. They notified Adams County in the summer of 2012 based on a news clip that the Packers did with ABC. So kudos
this citizens
to the
group
Packers.
Of yours. Mm-hmm. The citizens group of yours, okay.
Yes, the citizens group. And so they notified our county asking if there was some possibilities to strike up some communications regarding the idea of utilizing solar panels floating on the water and in connection with a water quality improvement mechanism within the solar panel energy production system.
So they'd be, what, sucking phosphorus or sucking up the algae blooms as they occur? How does that work?
Yes, correct. It would be a flocculation process that would involve some different types of technologies, and they basically, in very simple terms, would remove the algae, nitrogen, phosphorus, and create a flocculant that would then be removed from the water system while producing power, which can then be utilized by utilities and private companies.
And when we talked a couple of days ago, you told me these people from Australia were in Adams County this week.
They are. We have been busily meeting with regulatory folks, the citizens groups, some of the other stakeholders, some of the legislators, and we are trying to make this happen. To utilize this type of technology to produce energy and improve water quality just seems like it's a win-win for everybody. Yeah.
Well, Chris, we'll get into this in more detail in just a few minutes, but I want to turn now to John Kennedy, who's vice president of another citizens organization, the Big Old Plain Citizens Organization, or BEPCO. John, what can you tell us about your group?
Well, I guess I could say we're a highly motivated, strong-willed group that's looking to improve things on the Big Old Plain.
You had a huge fish kill on the Old Plain back in 2009. What do you remember about that and what the shoreline looked like after the ice breakup that year?
I remember that was almost a year to this day, or 4 years to this day, pardon me, 2009. And there was dead fish everywhere. A lot of large musky, pike, a few walleye, lots of crappies, some carp. You know, some of those musky that were in there were 40 plus inch long fish. You know, it's going to take years and years to replace those.
That was 60% of the fish in the reservoir, as I understand it.
I believe they said 70-80% was what the DNR estimated.
And yet 4 years later, we just had an ice fishing tournament, a world ice fishing tournament on that very reservoir, just a couple of months ago.
Yes, the fish were just starting to recover. There's a lot of the panfish are coming strong. There were some survivors in the game fish species, and they have began repopulation. And now we won't know until the ice is off now. But you know, it's not looking good.
And you took some steps after that incident in 2009 to make sure that it never happened again.
We spearheaded the effort to fundraising for the aerator, to revamp the aerator. It was in a pretty poor state of repair, and we raised the money and joined with DNR and Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company and basically rebuilt the under ice part of the aerator, took the old one out, scrapped it, and set up the new system.
And yet the DNR is predicting another big fish kill in the Old Plain this spring when the ice breaks up because of very low or non-existent oxygen levels in the water. What's your reaction to that after all you've gone through already?
Well, I'm pretty disappointed, obviously. You know, like I said, the fish were just starting to recover, and now they're getting put under more pressure again. We have plans to have walleyes for tomorrow in with their portable fish hatchery, and that is going to be primarily focusing on walleye repopulation. That was planned ahead, and we're going to continue to go through with these plans because it's even more important now.
If we have this big fish kill and it does look like it, you're going to have to start repopulating as quickly as possible.
Right. The difficulty now will be to find, you know, spawning candidates to harvest.
John Kennedy is the vice president of the Big Old Plain Citizens Organization. He's talking about the problems of the fish kill on the Big Old Plain Reservoir south of Mosinee. We've also got with us Chris Murphy, who's the conservationist, the county conservationist for Adams County, working on some creative solutions for the algae blooms on Petenwell Lake and the Castle Rock flowage, and Matt Kruger, the river restoration program manager of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. When we come back, we're going to hear from the DNR about some of these problems. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Our forecast for north central Wisconsin, clear and cool tonight, a low of 20 degrees. Friday, mostly sunny and spring-like with a high of 48 and a low of 28. Saturday, light rain likely, a high of 44, a low of 30. Sunday, cloudy and windy. We've got a slight chance of precipitation, a high of 40 and a low of 18. Right now, sunny skies across north central Wisconsin, 39 in Medford, 40 in Marshfield and Stevens Point, 46 in Phillips, 45 in Wapaka, 43 in Rhinelander, Land O'Lakes, Tomahawk and Merrill, 42 in Wetomen, Wisconsin Rapids, 41 degrees in Antigo, Woodruff, Eagle River, and outside our studio in Wausau. Wherever you're listening, we would invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. We are talking about water quality problems in the Wisconsin River Basin with Matt Kruger of the River Alliance, also John Kennedy of BEPCO, the Big Old Plain Citizens Organization, and Chris Murphy, the county conservationist for Adams County. Before the break, John, we were talking about the problems in the Big Old Plain, and it looks like it's going to be serious because of some tests that the DNR did showing really low oxygen levels. Let's hear right now from Ed Culhane. He's a communications specialist for the DNR, and he'll tell us about those studies and what they pretend for the future.
The big study that's going on right now is called a TMDL, total maximum daily load. And
that is the wrong segment from Ed Culhane. So just give me a second here, and we will get the right one up. Here's Ed Culhane talking about the study specifically for the Old Plain Reservoir.
The levels are checked weekly, and they're checked at every mile going back from the dam and then at various depths. Pretty much everything in there, other than a small area right around the aerator, is showing basically no oxygen.
What does that mean for the fish population?
It's bad news for the fish population. The dissolved oxygen levels are somewhere between 0 and 1 part per million. Game fish need 5 parts per million, so there's not enough oxygen. You know, some fish are going to be in this small area of refuge around the aerator. There's some thought that they could survive. But based on what we're seeing here, we're anticipating a large fish kill.
Is it going to be as bad as it happened in 2009, when I guess 60% of the fish were killed, according to some estimates?
Well, you know, it's hard to predict the future, but based on the oxygen readings we're looking at, we think it could be worse than 2009.
That's got to be so frustrating because, you know, here we had this incident. A task force was formed. They repaired and upgraded the aerator and thought they had some solutions in hand, and here we are again.
Yeah, and the dry years we've been having, that exacerbates the problem. The reservoir isn't as full of water. And then we had a couple thaws, one in late January. And so just the combination of things, the snow on top of the ice, which is blocking sunlight, it all came together. And also it's a problem that's been getting worse over the years. The biggest water quality problem we have out on the landscape right now is phosphorus, basically manure and fertilizer type runoff. But also phosphorus coming from municipal water treatment plants and industrial sources. So you've got agriculture, industry, and urban all putting phosphorus into our surface waters.
Boy, but those are long-term solutions. It's not immediate.
No, it is very much a long-term solution, and that's what we're facing here. It's taken us 40, 50 years to get into this mess, and it's not just us. This is nationwide. You know, you're seeing these kind of phosphorus-based water quality problems have been getting worse. Finding our way out of this is going to take time. We won't have it fixed by next year.
Matt Krueger, could you react to what Ed Culhane is saying, that this problem in the Eau Plaine, it's got multiple causes, it's been long in coming, and it doesn't have any quick, easy solutions?
I think that would be an accurate statement, at least the part about no easy solutions. He's right. Phosphorus is it's the biggest water quality challenge we see across the landscape in Wisconsin lakes and rivers. You drive around in high summer in Wisconsin, and I'm guessing you're going to see an algae bloom somewhere, and some of that's natural, but we certainly have too much phosphorus in our system, and polluted runoff is a big part of it. We've cleaned up a lot. I mean, we should remember the bad old days, as you put it earlier. Since the passage of the Clean Water Act in 1972, anything that has a pipe, a factory, a treatment plant, paper mill, they've all ratcheted down their phosphorus significantly, at significant cost to them, and we've seen water quality improve. Unfortunately, the Clean Water Act did not address so-called non-point source pollution or polluted runoff from the landscape, from diffuse sources.
And Chris Murphy, that's also a big part of the problem for Pete and Well and Castle Rock. Ed Culhane described it as a situation where a relatively fast-flowing Wisconsin River widens into a huge, slow-moving body of water, and then you've got that problem with no quick fixes, Chris Murphy.
That's somewhat accurate. While there are no quick fixes, I believe some of this that I've mentioned previously, the efforts that Geitz wishes to propose, provides a short-term solution that could be an awful useful method of addressing some of this phosphorus runoff.
And incidentally, if you'd like to find out more about Geitz, this Australian green energy company, or the River Alliance of Wisconsin, or the Pete and Well Castle Rock Stewards, the Packers, the citizens organization, the links are up on our Facebook page, and we're also going to get a link up to BEPCO, the Big Eau Plaine Citizens Organization, so you can find out more about these groups. John Kennedy, when we had the big fish kill in the Eau Plaine in 2009, they formed a task force, and there were solutions offered. They fixed the aerator, yet they weren't enough.
Yes, exactly. You know, what we're dealing with, I believe, is a large accumulation of junk on the bottom that's creating a high biological oxygen demand. And the reality is, as you said earlier, the solutions upriver are really long term. Right now, we own this junk at the bottom of the reservoir, and I think we need to take a really strong look at how we get rid of it.
Now, your group also sent out a news release recommending one short-term solution, that the water level in the reservoir be kept at 60% volume going into the winter months.
Yeah, that is something that was discussed back in a 1998 article, and it's simple common sense. The more water you've got, the more oxygen is available to help carry over through the winter and keep the fish supported.
Now, those water levels are maintained by Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company, a firm that's managed by the utilities and the paper industry. regulating the water levels in the entire Wisconsin River Basin. Last week, we had a chance to ask Sam Morgan, who incidentally is retiring today as their vice president of operations. And congratulations, Sam. We asked him about the effects of the water level on the Big O Plain and your desire to keep levels at 60% going into the winter. Mr. Morgan told us that the drought last summer and fall prevented the company from reaching that 60% figure, although he says they tried. But he also said the 60% figure was one of at least three conditions that needed to be met to keep fish kills from happening. Here's Sam Morgan.
And that was based on work we had done here at Wisconsin Valley Improvement, showing that if the reservoir was more than 60% full on December 1st, and a couple other conditions were met, like there was good inflow to the lake during the wintertime, that there hadn't been any fish kills in years when all three different things occurred, 60% on December 1st being only one of those three. We endeavor to do something like that if at all possible. This year we had a pretty dry late summer and a really dry fall, and what came to pass this year is on December 1st, rather than being at the 60% full level, it was at the 50% full level, which we thought was pretty good considering how dry it had been all summer.
Now, if you had put it at 60%, how would that affect the rest of the reservoirs and the level of the Wisconsin River?
We would have had to have even lower flows in the Wisconsin River during summer and fall than we had, and they were already at critically low levels because we'd reduce them to essentially the minimum that we can do under our license.
And, of course, there are other factors involved, too, with those low oxygen levels.
The whole problem down there basically stems around water quality in the lake. That's a function of the drainage area that it's in. The Big O Plain Reservoir drainage basin is basically 400 square miles of agricultural area, which means the lake gets a huge nutrient load from that agriculture runoff. Personally, I seriously wonder if there's any water level in the Big O Plain that would let it get through the winter in years like we had this year with two midwinter runoff events, then really cold weather and a ton of snow on the ice that blocks light from getting into the lake. There's more to the story than one number out there. There's just so much more going on out there that, you know, I'm afraid if it was 60%, you'd have a fish kill, and then it would become 70%, you'd have a fish kill, and then it would be 80%. Ultimately, that isn't the solution to the problem.
John Kennedy, your reaction to Sam Morgan's statement?
I guess the other two factors that were in that study, I believe, was a minimum of 6 CFS inflow from the Big O Plain River and not drawing down below 20% minimum in the April, the spring, at ice out. You know, BEPCO is not trying to say we want to keep 60% water in the O Plain. We're just trying to say that we'd like to see it at 60% at ice up, and then the normal winter drawdown can proceed as planned, maintaining somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-25% come ice out.
Well, what about his assertion? We had such a dry summer and fall. Maybe it was impossible to keep the levels up at 60%.
You know, it could be. I can sympathize with him. He's in a tough position. You know, I don't know the exact details of how he runs the operation, but I do believe that it should be taken into account the predicted precipitation for the year, and maybe a little more could have been saved early on during the early summer when we had plenty of water in reserve, and the flow then could have been, you know, I don't object to the 1,300 minimum flow. I mean, that is a standard that the DNR has set.
Mm-hmm.
To preserve the protect the fish in the Wisconsin River. Unfortunately, there's nothing in the plan to protect the fish in the Big O Plain.
John Kennedy of the Big O Plain Citizens Organization, Matt Kruger of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. When we come back, we're going to ask Chris Murphy more about this innovative solution, this solar-powered platform to clean up some of the mess in Lake Peatonwill and Castle Rock when Route 51 continues. Clear skies, cool temperatures across north central Wisconsin tonight, a low of 20. Friday, mostly sunny and spring-like, a high of 48, a low of 28. Light rain likely on Saturday. We've got 42 degrees right now outside our studio in Wausau. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Matt Krueger of the River Alliance of Wisconsin, Chris Murphy of he's a county conservationist for Adams County, and also John Kennedy of the Big Old Plains Citizens Organization. We're talking about water quality issues on the Wisconsin River. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. And Ed comments on our Facebook page, this is a quote, "To me, the Wisconsin River is life, habitat for critters, a place to see the wonders of Wisconsin. We should respect it and cherish it." Matt Krueger?
Ed's right. It's magical. I think that's kind of what the message that came out of the Wisconsin River Symposium that occurred in the campus of Stevens Point, UW-Stevens Point, earlier today. There's a lot of people whose lives are impacted by this river, whether they realize it or not, and there's a lot of good reasons to keep up the work to restore it and to clean it up. And there's some exciting developments on the horizon that we could get into at some point, but I think the study the DNR has going on right now is really going to give us, it's going to be a catalyst toward making some significant improvements on the river.
Chris Murphy, tell us about this innovative concept you're working on with the Australian Green Energy Company. We've already touched on it. Again, it's Global Environmental Infrastructure Technology Solutions, or GITES, all designed to take care of the phosphorus problems and the algae blooms on Lake Peatonwell. Now, you mentioned that they chose Adams County because of a news story that they did with your citizens group. Have they done anything like this, a solar-powered floating platform in other countries?
Yes, they have. They have projects located in Italy, in France, South Korea, and there is one currently being developed in Australia. And their desire is to make Adams County their entry point for North America.
Why an Australian company? Aren't there American companies with this kind of green energy experience?
I don't know, Glenn. What I do know is we have a company that has come to us who has offered flexibility, who has listened to what we've come to find as feedback from our local folks here, as well as the regulatory and the political bodies, who are willing to do what's good for Adams County and the upper Wisconsin River. And a good example of that is at one point in time, we were focusing our efforts solely on Peatonwell. They are now looking at branching up through the system. We have not necessarily discussed going as far north as the Big Old Plain, but as I sit and listen, boy, do I feel that there's some opportunities that exist for GITES to work in the upper watershed to apply this technology, and that would provide a benefit to all those that are involved.
Now, this floating power plant, according to your news release, would generate 500 megawatts of electricity. That's huge. That's equivalent to some coal-fired power plants. Are you sure that figure is accurate?
It is accurate in the sense that that is the long-term goal. It is the goal that is needed to produce, which is an item which Adams County is very excited about, and that is the possibility of a manufacturing facility located here in Adams County. So eventually, yes, 500 megawatts is the goal, but we are thinking more along the lines of working with them to get a good start with perhaps anywhere between 5 to 10 megawatts.
Are you going to have to get approval from the EPA or state regulatory agencies for this?
Not the EPA. We have talked with the DNR, and the Army Corps of Engineers would be the federal arm. We do need to get cooperation from the stakeholders who have the water flowage rights for the locations that we're considering. So really, after that, there becomes the issue of who wants to purchase this power that, in essence, can create 150 to 250 jobs in a manufacturing facility in Adams County.
How big is this platform going to be?
You mean like the
floating power plant platform, yeah.
It equivalates to be 1 acre per megawatt. So it's flexible in the size of the
You're talking 500 acres?
Well, no, we're gonna back off from one single 500 unit to several smaller units.
Wow.
Located on the different flowages. The thought there being is we can get a better water quality benefit that will help everybody throughout the system.
Matt Krueger?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't jump in, and I'm very intrigued and about this Geitz technology, and I think there's a lot of technological innovations that can help us abate the problem, but I guess I have an air of caution in my mind that this isn't necessarily a fix. If this can make people's lives better and it can create jobs and clean up the water, I think that I'm all for it, and I think it should be explored further. But it's treating. I kind of look at it. It's treating the symptom, not the disease. The disease is we've got polluted runoff. We've got phosphorus coming in from this all over the place into the system, and we have the data that tells us where it's coming from. I mean, we have the technology to do it. We know what some of the fixes are. It's not going to be easy. It's a long term fix. But I just wanted to throw an air of caution in there. I don't think we can take our eye off the main goal, which would be to reduce pollution at its sources. And we know where those are.
Yeah, and Glenn, I would add then that Matt is correct. But in the toolbox of addressing this phosphorus runoff, this is a huge tool. And while it's not a silver bullet, we all understand that. But there's been how many years of working with farmers to reduce the phosphorus runoff off of these fields? And again, the point source pollution is and has been working towards that. But, again, I don't want to sound as if I'm a salesman for Geitz, and I certainly don't want to come across as this is something that's going to be the cure-all. But, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. Partnerships is what's going to correct this issue. And the partnerships that can be formed with private companies, along with the regulatory agencies, along with the citizen input, is what's going to be needed to eventually clean up the phosphorus limit loads that are within the Wisconsin River.
And if you do follow the links on the Route 51 Facebook page, you can find a picture of what this would look like from a previous Geitz project, an array of small individual power plant segments. Let's go to the phones right now, and let's take Ned. Ned, you're on Route 51. Hello, Ned.
Hi. Yes, I'm a limnologist. I've studied lakes for a long time, and one of the classic studies is a study in the Experimental Lakes area of Ontario, where they had no housing around the lake and no businesses, and it was pristine area. They divided the lake by a curtain that went all the way down into the sediments into two basins. One added carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus. The other side just carbon and nitrogen. And the point of this is that the side with the phosphorus looked like pea soup. The side with carbon and nitrogen did not. It stayed clean and clear. And so the point is that I agree with the gentleman. Clearly, phosphorus is the limiting nutrient. We need to look at phosphorus loading as they are suggesting. And I would suggest, in addition to, I support all of their positions, but I would also suggest fencing cattle and other livestock back from streams and rivers. Any time you get a cow to defecate in a stream, it's 20 times as much as a human as far as phosphorus. It's a huge phosphorus loading. We've got to fence back cattle and livestock from streams.
Ned, thanks so much for the phone call. Let me get some reaction. John Kennedy, the idea that maybe we need to better regulate farmers and their cattle.
Yeah, I guess it's just common sense. I mean, you can't just go and crap in the water because it's going to be there.
We've spent a tremendous amount of time and energy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Go on, Chris.
Oh, okay. We've spent a tremendous amount of time and energy, we being the Land and Water Conservation Departments throughout Wisconsin, working with farmers, and we'll continue to do so. And again, that partnership and the long-term solution of an integrated approach. So I just want to make sure that it's clearly understood that, you know, there are efforts trying to be made. One of the hurdles and challenges that we have as land and water conservation departments, quite frankly, is a lack of funding to implement these practices. And so that's a topic right there that publics and residents of the state of Wisconsin, as you talk to your legislators, if you truly want to reduce the phosphorus runoff from these fields, we need the resources to make that happen.
We've been talking about a study being conducted by the state of Wisconsin and the DNR on the entire Wisconsin River watershed. Let's listen to Ed Culhane talk about that, and he'll talk about, as Chris just mentioned, the integrated approach that he hopes will arise from it.
The big study that's going on right now is called a TMDL, Total Maximum Daily Load. And that's a calculation of the maximum amount of a given pollutant that a water body can receive and still meet water quality standards. For instance, how much phosphorus can we put into the Wisconsin River and still be, you know, high quality water, which means swimming, you know, fishing, you know, that people could enjoy it.
Have you come up with any preliminary results yet?
We certainly know that, you know, that we're not meeting water quality in several areas along the river, notably the flowages and the impoundments, you know, the Big O Plain, Lake Peyton Well, Castle Rock. These are areas where there's too much phosphorus. We have, you know, toxic algae blooms, sometimes low dissolved oxygen.
When do you think the study is going to be complete?
It's a very complex study. It involves a lot of monitoring. I think we have over 100 monitoring stations going on, and then more than a dozen, you know, sort of point discharges that are being monitored. And then there's a lot of mathematics that takes place after that to develop a computer model.
But when
and
do you
we
think
hope
it's...
to have that done by 2016.
And when you get the results, is that going to lead to policy recommendations?
There will be public input. So, you know, we'll have a draft ready in 2016, and then we'll take that out to the public, you know, and share it with everyone and say, you know, this is our plan. You know, this is what we know from all of our modeling. This is our plan for moving forward. Then after that, you know, it goes to the Environmental Protection Agency. And then once that's approved, then we would begin the process of implementation. And implementation is going to cover a very broad range of activities. You know, everyone involved, you know, all the stakeholders, you know, have a need to help towards a solution, you know, and when we get to a solution, it'll benefit everybody. There are some real community-based things happening on the landscape that are pretty exciting. Farmer-led councils is one of them. You know, going to the folks in the watershed and into the agricultural community and say, you know, here's the situation, here's our science, how do you think we can get ahead of this problem? Letting the folks who live and work in those communities, you know, really take the lead. And I think that's an important part of this.
And, Matt, your reaction to what you just heard from Ed Culhane?
Yeah, I think Ed's right, the last part of what he said. When this thing gets done, we're going to have a ton of data. We're going to know where the sources are of the pollution. It's all going to come down to citizens being motivated to make this thing go and telling their legislators that they want to see improvement.
And what happens if, when we go to get public input, you get resistance from citizens, like we got the smart growth planning and land use planning? I mean, it can run both ways, can't it?
Yeah, there will be resistance inevitably, because people are going to be told you're polluting too much. You've got to ratchet it down. But there's a lot of models for fostering dialogue and for people to come to the table. And once there's information provided, once they can see the impacts of their behaviors, there's an opportunity for them to change their behavior. And, you know, sometimes the hammer of enforcement is there in the back pocket in case that people don't do it willingly.
Chris Murphy, your reaction to what we just heard?
Matt's spot on. It's got to be that combination thereof. And it's, you know, it's got to come from the public. They have got to speak loudly and clearly. The tools of implementation are here. whether it be something as innovative as what Geitz is proposing, or something as simple as fencing a cow away from the stream. We know what needs to be done. It's just a matter of public will. It just needs to happen.
John Kennedy, the ice breakup is just around the corner. We haven't seen any dead fish yet. Are you crossing your fingers and hoping for the best?
Yeah, it does appear that the aerator is starting to gain a little bit of ground based on the oxygen testing they've been doing. There have been some encouraging reports of some fish being caught in the area near the aerator. So there are, some survivors,
Well, let's hope for the best. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We do want to thank today's guests, Matt Krueger, the River Restoration Program Manager of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. Also, John Kennedy, Vice President of the Big Old Plains Citizens Organization and County Conservationist for Adams County. Chris Murphy, thanks to Ed Culhane of the DNR and Sam Morgan of Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company for their contributions. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and on-air producer, Rick Ryer. Special music today by Peter, Paul, and Mary, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Al Green, and Hoagie Carmichael. Next week on Route 51, we focus on the economic challenges faced by Wisconsin's paper industry. Our guests will include Milwaukee Journal investigative reporter and international paper industry expert, John Schmidt. Route 51 is heard every Thursday on Ideas Network stations throughout north central Wisconsin and beginning next week on our new station in Rhinelander, 89.9 FM WHSF. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we are heading out of town.
Lingering in the shade of a kind old tree, blow away your troubles, dream a dream. Up the lazy river where the robin's song awakes a bright new morning, you can loaf along. Blue skies up above, everyone's in love. Up that lazy river, how happy you can be. Up that lazy river.